A65. Number 15A.
We have taken the level of divine science, and I have seen the place values of one life, one truth, one love, that divine principle love. Now, these are the place values, and if we consider it from the point of view of practice, then we see also that these four aspects of divine science give us an indication for the treatment, for practice. We know from the earlier investigation into the level of divine science that here where evil is excluded. So any practice that practices on that level of divine science goes out from the fact that evil is excluded. Therefore, the practice is constantly directed towards the point of acknowledging the present perfection, of the everlasting perfection of being. That's the isness sense, the oneness sense on this level that we say and that we see everything is already expressed and therefore is at the point of infinite, ever-present perfection, so that the practice is the acknowledgement of this infinite perfection. Therefore, we have also seen what we demonstrate here is actually that we do not demonstrate the power of good over evil, which is on the level of Christian science, but we demonstrate God itself. That's what is being brought out, that we demonstrate really the divine origin of the universe. That is a completely different attitude than if we would try to demonstrate a specific idea, a specific situation, and say to ourselves, here we have a positive or a negative problem. Now, how am I going to apply now the synonymous term to that positive or negative problem? On the level of divine science, we don't do that. We demonstrate God. And that is naturally a much higher sense. So, we demonstrate what? We demonstrate the ever-present perfection of God as the origin of all. Therefore, our whole thought in the treatment always goes back to God. It is as if we would demonstrate God instead of demonstrating health or demonstrating the power of truth over error. What we want to bring out is the glory of God. And so we have quite a different practice, and we can see that this practice is a practice that we have no matter if an urgent or not an urgent problem tries to present itself to consciousness. It's therefore a practice that is continual, that so to say is the main atmosphere of our life. It's the main atmosphere of our consciousness, that everything is directed towards that practice which practices the glory of God, by acknowledging really God as the one life, as the one origin, as the one truth, or Christ, as the one love, Christianity, namely as the one fact that love is always manifested, is already at the point of perfect objectification, and therefore we always demonstrate within ourselves that God has one principle that is directed towards one great aim and great purpose, and so we live in heaven, so to say, which is the term for this level. Yes. Now, if we analyze it even more, and we say, now, what is the practice in the world of divine science? We have seen there that it's symbolized by the one life. Therefore, our practice goes out and says, well, what I demonstrate is that life demonstrates life. That life demonstrates itself. Can you see how there is no ulterior motive, no personal motive there? We are not going out to demonstrate something, but much more that we see that life itself is demonstrating itself, and what it demonstrates is its own life. So at that point I can always sit back and contemplate really in practice that there is only one life. Wonderful, there is only one life. Evil is excluded on that level. Therefore, what is excluded if there is only one life? There is excluded the notion that there is a beginning and an end, that there is a birth, that there is a death. It's excluded that there is mortal life, human life. All that is excluded. My thought just doesn't take that in. In my consciousness, I am not concerned with that kind of suggestion, but I am very positively concerned in demonstrating to see that the only life that demonstrates itself is that life which was from everlasting to everlasting, that life never entered into body, never was manifested in the body, never lives through a body, never lives through a mortal man, therefore that one life is eternal life and demonstrates life everlasting. And if I begin to be quiet within myself and value it and see it, suddenly perhaps that terrific sense opens up within oneself where we just touch that sense that I live and move and have my being in that eternal life. I never started anywhere. I have no starting point. I have no ending point. Everything is at the point of isness, of factuality, and therefore the whole problematics of birth and death, life before birth, life after death, just doesn't enter anymore. It's excluded. And so, can you see, one demonstrates here that question of that there is no death, not so much with the sense that life overcomes death, but much more with the sense that life never could be anything but life, that life never could be turned into anything else but life, that life remains life and has always remained life. And so all these many, many questions about birth and death just are excluded. Can you see the value of knowing the tonality of a level? Because then if you take up a question like death, you take it up quite differently than on the level of absolute Christian Science or on the level of Christian Science. And naturally we know that if we stay too long on the level of Christian Science and try to solve the question of death on that level, that will finally not be enough, because it asks always for the higher level, and so even afterwards on the level of Absolute Christian Science, where we deal with death again in a new way, where we see that life is constantly impelling life, and therefore therefore is bringing forth constantly the newness of life. Newness of life, that's Absolute Christian Science. Finally, we go and say, well, what do we mean by newness of life? Does it mean that there were an old life or no life, and that something has to become new? Has life then before been old or not good enough? How would you express it? Not full enough? And finally you come to say, oh, I have to rise higher to the level of divine science, where at the point of life we just see, no, life was from everlasting to everlasting, without beginning, without end. So in life, all these suggestions of newness of life, of overcoming death through the newness of life, is just excluded. That's the practice here life. What could we see if we take further the standpoint of truth in the practice? That truth is the Christ, but it is the Christ truth, it's the truth itself. It isn't so much concerned with all the truths. That is a question that comes on the level of Absolute Christian Science. So that we have only one truth. Well, if we have only one truth, then you see now here why we have on this level of divine science the healing of the multitude or the collective treatment. If there is only one truth, we cannot heal many things, because in the one there is only one, and that includes all. And therefore here, on that level, it is possible that we can touch with that consciousness of divine science, with that Christ consciousness, we can touch the whole universe, the multitude of problems, where we say, well, suddenly all the problems solve themselves. Without that we felt I have to solve this problem and that problem, problem 3 and problem 4 and 5 and 6, where we suddenly feel everything fell into place. So often you have said that everything then fell into place. That means that with one truth that is all-inclusive, really we give a collective treatment that is so all-embracing, so all-encircling, that it touches everything that needs to be touched. Therefore, the specific truth at this point is not needed to be known. Is that the right sentence? Does not need to be known. And you see, because truth includes them anywhere, anyway. The redundancy of truth as the one truth and the only truth is so big that all the truths are anyway included. So at that point I can see, I don't need to, if I have that consciousness, it's always naturally the condition, that I don't need to treat everyone separately and individually. Jesus healed the multitude from time to time. It is also there where we see that every treatment is successful, because it's the one truth, therefore that one truth can never be not successful, because it's a reality being. What we may see is that that truth will touch a consciousness that is not aware of it, and we are not aware of it, because still the big truth, the one truth, will always be an answer to any question. In that way we can see that no treatment is unnecessary, or no, is unsuccessful. Every treatment that goes out from the one truth is successful. It may not be the success that the individual human consciousness may expect, but it is always the Christ of being, the Christ that touches reality and the universe. Again, we can see what, if there is only one truth, and if that one truth is the Christ, then we can also see, just as in the world where life lives itself, demonstrates itself, here truth demonstrates itself as truth. So we don't have to demonstrate truth. In the moment we would like to demonstrate truth, what are we doing? That we have a limited sense of truth. Because the human mind can only have a limited sense of truth. So we can never with the human mind really attain that altitude that we are talking here, which would say, no, let God truth, the Christ of God, let that work and demonstrate itself. Because that truth is the whole of truth. And that whole of truth is the ideal truth, and that knows exactly everything. So we let go, so to say, of our human effort to try to achieve something. That's always a big point. That we let it happen, so that we let truth demonstrate itself. So in the world, we let life live itself. In truth, we let truth demonstrate itself and do not interfere with that demonstration. Do not judge truth demonstration with a human standard, where we humanly judge, was the treatment successful, was it not successful? Truth is always the victor. Cannot be anything but the victor. Though it may be a victor in a quite a different way than what we humanly expect it to be. And that needs that humility to say, not my will, but thy will be done. Yeah. What do we see in love as treatment, as a practical application? We have seen that in love we have in Christianity, that it is the one love, or let's say love as such. Love as such. Therefore, because, now you can see that, because love is that office in being which says, I am always manifest in perfection. It's not the perfectibility that is under consideration here, but that love means that the divine being, the nature of divine being, is already at the point of being perfectly expressed. We can see that this is our protection, that this is our infinite protection, because it does not give a single chance for error to have a place, to have room in that love. We have seen the level of divine science, it always gives a sense of realm, of space, of the universe filling all space. With space, Mrs. Eddy, doesn't mean a three-dimensional space of longitude, latitude, and height, but that she meant the realm of being. Well, if love is always manifested in the realm of being, in its perfection, then this is our protection against any kind of belief. So we exclude again the possibility that something could be perfect. And so it is a protection for us. You know, in Christian Science that rendering, doing protective work, you know, is quite a slogan. And I never know quite what they mean by doing protective work. Alone the expression is so horrible. Because saying we have to do protective work is to acknowledge that there is an enemy. So you go out from the grossest sense of duality. You accept right from the beginning that there can be a hostile power, a hostile mentality, a hostile law, whatever it is, a hostile influence, and you go out from duality. Well, love is its own protection. Love does the protective work. Love does the protective work. Love is its own protection by seeing that there is nothing manifested that is not of love's perfection. And that is, so to say, the self-protection of love. So if we do protective work in the real sense on this level of divine science, we are not going to run down an enemy. We are not going to fight against an enemy, against whatever that enemy is, against the belief, against the mortal mind, against. When we touch love in the highest sense, in the sense of divine science, as for instance presented in the chapter on Apocalypse, then you find a completely different sense of love, how love deals with the so-called enemy. There is no accuser there. That's our protection. When we see that there is no accuser, instead of fighting an accuser. When we see there are no seven vials full of the seven last plagues, but that when we look at it properly, we see the Lamb's bride, the bride of the Lamb, we see the unity, the coexistence of love and its idea. So there in Apocalypse, as we'll see next year when we take Apocalypse as a subject, you will see that Apocalypse handles that whole question of an enemy, of an accuser, of a serpent, of a dragon, of animal magnetism, of malicious animal magnetism, completely different than what we would handle it on the other levels. It's always going out from this very point here of love in in divine science, that love knows no accuser. That for love, we always have the full compensation for all the seven vials full of the lost plagues. There is always the idea of love that is wedded to us. Quite a terrific thing. And you feel right away that in divine science there is no struggle going on, no fighting going on. I quite agree that's something that the beginner cannot see right away, that in our development in the line of Christian Science starts with a level of Christian Science, and we put up a wonderful fight, just as Paul put up a wonderful fight, and we fight evil with good, and we overcome evil with good, and so on. But little by little, we should be led on to a higher way of handling the world and the world situation and our place in the world and how the world could affect us, so that finally the world cannot affect us anymore. So that evil can come but finds no place within our consciousness. That's what it should be. And evil only is excluded when it finds no place to come in, that is not taken in. And evil cannot come in when every place is already filled within that realm. The moment every Every place is filled in a hole. Nobody can come in and sit down anymore. So in that way, we have to see that we fill our consciousness so watertight against the influx of any suggestion that finally evil can come and finds no room within ourselves and goes away. Then error is excluded. Yes, this is the law, how we practice it, perhaps from the point of view of love in Christianity. Then from the point of view of science, the divine principle love, again we can see that here we would find very much stress that within that one being there is just a divine principle at work, principle operating, all for the purpose of glorifying God, love. That's our demonstration here. And it is that point where we, so to say, accept really the fact that we do not know what should be demonstrated at that point, because we do not know the plan of God. No human person, no human mind knows the plan of God, and therefore no human mind knows what should be demonstrated, what is in the line of future development. And that's a big, big step forward. You can see up to this point, usually the student of Christian Science knows, anyway, he thinks he knows what should be demonstrated. And he thinks, I should demonstrate this, and I should demonstrate that, and I should demonstrate another thing, and another thing, and another thing. As if he would know the plan of God. But fundamentally, he doesn't. It just doesn't. So when we practice in divine science at the point of science, then we practice so that we just know that the divine principle is in an impersonal way at work, where no personal view comes in which says this should be demonstrated, that should be demonstrated, but where we just see that there is a principle, and it's a divine principle, because it's divine, it brings out a divine nature, a divine purpose, a divine goal, and therefore that which will be demonstrated is absolutely a surprise for us. It's the adventure of love to us. That's it. Okay.